Well, hello everyone. My name is Kevin. So thrilled to be with you. I've actually been to this church a number of times. My in-laws attend church here, and every time we visit, this is our home church. And I'm so thankful to have the opportunity to share with y'all this morning. The Los Angeles Lakers were in New York to play a basketball game. And while they were there, they had an off night. And on the off night, the entire team decided to go down to Broadway to see a showing of Hamilton, which was an incredible experience for the team and a huge bummer for the entire row sitting right behind them. But after the show, the media were interviewing the players and asked them what they thought, and Josh Hart said this. He said, "Sometimes when you're so caught up in your world, you don't really see other things. So it's great to see other people in their worlds take things from Hamilton and bring it back to your world." I love this quote. Josh Hart says, "I went to the theater and I saw this story, and it was a story that was filled with all kinds of truth and insight about how life works." But then he takes it a step further, right? He says, "I didn't leave those ideas in the theater. I actually brought them back with me to my life, and those ideas are going to change the way that I live today." He's talking about the transformational power of story. Have you ever had a similar experience? Time when a story, whether it was a movie or a book or a theater production, but a story actually changed your life? I would suggest that you have, whether or not you even recognized it at the time, because every time we engage with story, it holds this tremendous potential to transform us. And the more aware we are of that truth, the more God can use these stories to do His transformative work in us. As I've traveled around to speak about my book, God and Hamilton, I'm always curious how many Hamilton fans I'm actually speaking to. So maybe by applause, how many of you are fans of the musical Hamilton? Okay, so a good amount of you. Some of you are not as familiar. Maybe some of you don't even like musicals. I have one friend that I was telling my book about, and he said, "Man, I just don't like musicals." I said, "Really, why not?" He said, "You know, there's just so much singing in musicals." But wherever you are, whether you're a huge Hamilton fan or whether you think there's too much singing in musicals, I want to share with you one of the truths that I learned from writing my book, this idea of the transformational power of story. And I believe that idea is relevant to every single one of us, because who among us does not long to be transformed? Who among us does not feel this gap between who we are and who we long to be? Who among us does not look at our lives and have certain areas that we say, "This is not the life I want to live. This is not who God created me to be." Maybe we wish we were more confident, or wish we didn't struggle with this particular temptation, or we wish we weren't quite as interested in the Kardashians. Whatever it is, we desperately long to experience transformation. And the good news today is that God uses stories to do that work in your life. God uses stories to encourage you, to inspire you, to cast vision for what your life could look like. Let me go through right up front here three quick examples from the story of Hamilton and how we can apply truths from his life to our life today from this musical. First of all, the musical Hamilton is about Alexander Hamilton, one of our founding fathers, who came to America at the dawn of the Revolution and who lived with an extraordinary initiative. He joins the army as the British troops are kind of rolling into New York, 32,000 of the best trained soldiers in the entire world. Washington's men are outmanned, outtrained, and they panic, and everybody begins to retreat out of New York. And in the middle of this retreat, there's one bright spot. Alexander Hamilton recruits some college students to go on a raid and to steal some British cannons to help aid in the retreat. And I love this image of an entire army retreating from the enemy, and one man standing up and say, "I will go into the face of this. I will take initiative when problems arise." We see that initiative on the stage, and it inspires us, it challenges us, it makes us say, "Well, I want that initiative to be true of my life." There's a famous line from the musical Hamilton, the most famous lyric probably, where Hamilton sings out, "I am not throwing away my shot," by which he means, "I am not gonna let fear keep me from my calling. I am not gonna let self-doubt sabotage me. I am not gonna let other people's opinions of me hold me back. I am not throwing away my shot." And we see this story and we walk out of the theater saying, "I want to be the kind of person that doesn't throw away my shot." Some of you today have dreams you should be chasing, risks you should be taking, but the enemy feels too formidable for whatever reason. And it's time to take your shot. In another scene, Eliza Hamilton, Alexander Hamilton's wife, who was a remarkable woman of faith, she's struggling with forgiving her husband. You see, her husband has had an affair that has become very public. In fact, it became the first U.S. government sex scandal, which didn't take us very long. So the first U.S. government sex scandal, and Eliza, as you can imagine, is humiliated and embarrassed and ashamed, and she's wrestling through how she can possibly forgive her husband for doing this. But she walked deeply with God and wrestles through that and finally gets to a place of forgiveness. And there's a moment on the stage that captures this moment, and the entire chorus sings out, "Forgiveness, can you imagine?" And you hear people weeping in the audience because that moment intersects with our lives, and it makes us confront the question of the people that have hurt us, that have wronged us, that have betrayed us, and whether or not we have forgiven them. That's a very relevant question today. Some of you have been hurt so badly or wronged so deeply that forgiveness feels like an impossibility. And maybe for you, the only step today is to pray that God might soften your heart and help you move towards forgiveness. Or maybe the only question you should be asking yourself for the next 6 months is, what will not forgiving this person do to me long term? I like to imagine Eliza Hamilton wrestling through those kinds of questions, praying those kinds of prayers. Another character from the musical that can inspire us and challenge us is King George. King George in the musical kind of is a comedic character. He's very, very funny. And he's portrayed as this jealous, angry, bitter king that is desperately clutching to what he wants to see happen. At one point, he sings back to the Americans during the Revolutionary War, begging them not to leave him. And he sings to them, I'm gonna sing for you real quick, so everybody hang on to your hats, okay? I'm actually very excited about singing through this sound system. Here's what he sings. He sings, "Because when push comes to shove, I will kill your friends and family to remind you of my love." Right, Hamlin fans, you know the song, right? All right, all right. Some of you are like, that's why I don't go to musicals, what happened right there. But King George, his character confronts our lives, and it makes us ask the question, what are the ways that I am jealous and angry and bitter because life has not gone the way I wanted it to? What are the ways that I am desperately clutching to the things that I want to see happen and refusing to let go? And what is that costing me? And what would it look like maybe to let go of some things and to surrender to God's will for our lives? Do you see how God can use these stories to transform us? And he does this work because he loves us, right? More than you can even begin to possibly imagine. He loves you exactly as you are, not as you should be. But he looks at your life and he says, I have so much more for you. And he nudges us forward in this process of transformation. This truth of the transformational power of story is something that neuroscientists have learned more and more about as they study our brain and how our brain interacts with story. Neuroscientists will tell you that every time you watch a story, that your brains begin to act as if the story is happening to you. Brené Brown is a writer, and she writes about this phenomenon. She says that we are hardwired for story, that story is literally in our DNA. Let me go see the movie Captain Underpants. It's another great movie about these kids that draw cartoons, right? And the superhero in their cartoon is a character called Captain Underpants. He wears nothing but cape and underwear. I took my 4 boys to see the movie. My youngest son, Levi, he loved it so much that for the next 2 weeks would wear nothing but this. Right? Pretty cute, huh? But what neuroscientists would tell you is that when you go see a movie about kids that are drawing cartoons, that the part of your brain required to draw is firing like crazy. That fascinating? They have a name for this phenomenon. They call it transportation. The idea is that we get transported into the story. And when that happens, it holds a tremendous potential to do transformative work in us. This is the truth that Jesus inherently understood and embodied during his time here on earth. If you read through Jesus's life in the Gospels, you see very quickly that he had a primary strategy for how to communicate to his audience about life in the kingdom of God. How did he do it? Telling stories, right? Mark chapter 4. Jesus had just told a set of parables to an audience. And then it says this in the Message translation. It says, "With many stories like these, he presented his message to them, fitting the stories to their experience and maturity. He was never without a story when he spoke." Matthew 13 is a similar passage where Jesus had just told a set of stories, and his disciples actually come up to him and they ask him, "Jesus, why do you tell so many stories?" And he responds by saying this, "You've been given insight into God's kingdom. You know how it works. Not everybody has this gift, this insight. It hasn't been given to them. Whenever someone has a ready heart for this, the insights and understandings flow freely. But if there is no readiness, any trace of receptivity soon disappears. That's why I tell stories, to create readiness, to nudge the people toward receptive insight. Jesus here seems to be saying, I tell stories because stories nudge people forward. And he hopes even to this day, 2,000 years later, that we might enter into the stories that he's told, the parables, and find truth and insight and inspiration from them and bring those ideas back to our life today and let them change the way that we live today. And we can do that with any story, even a story like Hamilton, which is a deeply spiritual story. In many ways, it is a modern day parable. Well, with the rest of our time here today, I want to go more deeply into one spiritual truth that we can learn from Alexander Hamilton's life and bring back to our lives today, and that can radically change the way that we walk with God today. The way that I structure my book, God and Hamilton, is every chapter is a different theme from Hamilton's life. It's a chapter about shame, about despair, about forgiveness, about death, about redemption. But today I want to talk to you about the idea that Hamilton tells a story of grace. Alexander Hamilton grew up in the Caribbean. When he was only 5 years old, his father abandoned their family. At the age of 12, his mother died. So Hamilton finds himself at a very young age, this poor orphan kid in the Caribbean without any real future possibilities. A few years later, a hurricane devastates the island that Hamilton lives on, and Hamilton pens a letter in response to this natural disaster. The letter was so beautifully written that the local newspaper picks it up and publishes it. Some businessmen read the letter and they see this enormous intellectual potential in the author, and they go and they find him and they meet with him. And I love to imagine this meeting. These wealthy businessmen sitting down with this poor orphan kid and saying to him, son, you have real potential. Son, we believe in you. We think you can make a mark on this world. What a gift of grace just those words must have been. Makes me think what a gift of grace our words might be to the people in our lives. But these men, they go beyond words. They actually raise money. They put a fund together to send Alexander Hamilton to America to get his education. So everything that Hamilton becomes in America, and most historians would say that behind George Washington, Hamilton was the second most influential founding father. But everything Hamilton becomes in this country is built on this foundation of grace, right? It was a gift that he didn't earn, a gift he didn't deserve, a gift freely given. What's true of Hamilton? It's true of every single one of us. Our lives also are built on this foundation of God's grace. The Apostle Paul, a man who knew a little bit something about God's grace, right? He says it this way in 1 Corinthians 15:10. He says, but by the grace of God, I am what I am. The problem with this idea is that we struggle so much to imagine the possibility of grace in our lives. So certainly true of my story. I didn't become a follower of Jesus until my later high school years. And throughout middle school and high school, I did a lot of really, really dumb things. I have a picture here of myself as a high school kid. This is my grunge band Loaf up here on the screen. We were amazing, in case you're wondering. We actually did a demo, and we named the demo Eat Our Crust, which to this day I consider one of my greatest moments of creative inspiration, was naming that record, Eat Our Crust. But this kid did so many dumb things in middle school and high school, and not just dumb things, but deeply offensive things to God, hurtful things to others, things that to this day I regret. But then I started going to this ministry called Young Life, and for the first time I started hearing about God's love and God's grace, and I thought, this sounds incredible, but this can't be true for me. God can't forgive me for all the mistakes I've made. God can't forgive me for all of my failures. God's grace isn't big enough for the mess I've made. 25 years later, every time I come face to face with my dysfunction, I still struggle with that lack of imagination. I have two teenage sons at home as well, and I'm gonna show you a picture. I showed a picture of Levi, so I'll show you a picture of my two teenage sons as well. This is a picture of them. They're very small for their age. But one of these boys had a very hard time passing his driver's test. And he took the test a number of times and failed it a number of times and got to the point where he had one last chance to pass it. If he didn't pass this last time, he would have to go through this private class. It would cost a lot of money and it would take a lot of time. And so I went ahead and talked to him and I said, buddy, I really need you to pass this last test, right? I go to him, I say, this Wednesday morning, I'm taking the DMV and I put a carrot out in front of him. I said, if you pass the test this time before school, I'm gonna take you to Chick-fil-A and we're gonna get some breakfast before school at Chick-fil-A. It's a pretty big carrot, right? Chicken biscuits, right? So he goes, we take the test, or he takes the test. He walks over the computers. I'm watching him. I'm sitting there. I'm just praying, God, please help him pass the test. I'm saying, like, if you help him pass his test, God, I'll become a missionary to Africa. Like anything, just help him pass the test. Right? You've been there. You've been there. So he takes the test. He goes over the counter. They give him the results. And I can tell immediately he's failed the test again. And he's so embarrassed. And he's so angry. And I'm so angry, right? We walk out to the car and I'm just breathing and praying and trying to figure out how do I respond in this moment. This feels like an important moment as a father, right? And as I'm praying, I hear this gentle whisper of a voice saying, just take the kid to Chick-fil-A, right? Just give him a little grace. But then as soon as I hear that voice, another thought pops into my head. And the other thought says, if you take him to Chick-fil-A, how will he learn his lesson? See, sometimes we struggle to imagine not only the possibility of grace for ourselves, but we struggle to imagine the possibility of extending grace to others. And I'm embarrassed to say that I did not take him to Chick-fil-A that day. I did the next best thing. I got in the car and I gave him a stern lecture. Because that's exactly what your kid needs when he's hurting and angry and afraid. He needs a good lecture from dad, right? This is great wisdom. I hope you're writing this down. More lectures. So I give him this stern lecture. Surprisingly, he gets kind of angry about the lecture. He starts yelling at me. And I'm already angry, and now I'm really angry because he's yelling at me. And then I start yelling at him. And for the next 7 minutes, we drive to his school. We drive right by Chick-fil-A. I can smell the chicken biscuits. And we're just yelling at each other the entire time. He gets out of the car and he slams the door. He doesn't say goodbye. He just walks off, right? And I just still have this image of him walking away and thinking, God, I failed in that moment so badly. My son needed better from that in that moment for me. And I failed. And I remember thinking, God, how are you gonna keep forgiving me for all of these failures? Have you ever been there? You ever failed for the thousandth time? And thought, how in the world, God, are you gonna forgive me for this mess that I've made? How in the world, God, are you gonna give me grace for this failure? Just to close the loop with the story with my son, he did go to the class and we paid a little money and he did get his driver's license, so that was good. And now he drives and I sit in the passenger seat and I yell at him all the time. So, you know, it's great, it's all worked out. Slow down, hit the brakes, you're gonna kill me, right? Jesus, who teaches us about life in the kingdom by telling stories, told one story about the prodigal son. You know the story. The son goes to the father and says, hey, dad, can I have my inheritance now? Would have been an incredibly disrespectful request, but shockingly, the father agrees and he gives him the inheritance. The son goes off and blows it all in wild living, ends up broke and alone and starving to death because famine comes to the land. Finally, the son comes to his senses and decides, well, I should go home and beg my father to take me on as a servant. That way, at least I'll have some food to eat and a roof over my head. The part we don't pay enough attention to is the son's total lack of imagination. He cannot even begin to possibly imagine the possibility that the father will welcome him back as a son. He knows he's failed too badly for that. He knows he has burned that bridge. And so he returns home. And the text then says this. It says, but while he was still a long way off, his father saw him. We have a picture here of a father standing out in front of the house, scanning the horizon day after day after day, hoping beyond hope that this is the day that the son returns home. The story goes on. While he was a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with anger towards him. He ran to his son and had him beaten and grounded him from screens for the rest of his life. Some of you are like, wait, I'm confused. Is that how the story really goes? That's not my translation. Were there screens in Jesus' time? We're very confused right now, right? Now, that's not how the story goes, but that's how we expect the story to go. That's how we expect God to respond to us when we return home having failed. But that's not how the story goes. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. What an extravagant picture of grace. And Jesus, of course, here is saying, this is what the Father is like. This is the grace the Father longs to offer to you today. Do you have a hard time imagining that possibility? Do you think you've failed too many times? Maybe you're sitting there saying, Kevin, you don't know about my dysfunction. You don't know about my addictions, my selfishness, my lust, my fill in the blank. Too many of you think that you're not worthy of that grace. Author Philip Yancey gives a great definition of grace. He says this, grace means there's nothing we can do to make God love us more, and there's nothing we can do to make God love us less. It's a gift that we can never earn and that we don't deserve, but a gift freely given. Heard a great illustration once about the way grace works in our lives. Imagine there's a string tied in between you and God, and that string represents relationship with God. Every time we go the path of the prodigal son, we cut that string in half and we chase after whatever it is that we know is going to make us happy and satisfied and content, only it doesn't, because it can't and it never will. But God, who longs for restored relationship with us, picks up the two ends of those string and ties them back together. And guess what happens to the string every time that process occurs? It gets a little bit shorter, a little bit shorter, and a little bit shorter. And God, by his grace, pulls us closer and closer to him. That is the grace God longs to offer to you today. Too many of you are being crushed by guilt and shame and self-hatred. And it's time to leave all of that garbage behind and to move into grace. That's the grace that Hamilton experienced. Will you take that lesson from his life and will you bring it back to your life today? Will you let it change the way you follow God today? Will you let it change the way that you exist in this world today? Will you let it change the way that you treat yourself today? Do you see how we can take lessons from these stories like Hamilton, and these lessons can transform our lives? Will you become more aware? Will you live with your eyes open to the way that stories can work in our lives, to the ways that God can use stories? Every time you go to a movie or read a book or go to a theater production, will you pray a prayer and say, God, what do you have for me in this story? Will you learn how to take truths from these stories and bring them back to your life and change the way you live today? I want to close with one final story that I stumbled across as I was researching my book, God in Hamilton. It's a story about Valley Forge, which was the winter of 1777. And in a lot of ways, it was the low point for the Continental Army and Washington and Hamilton and everybody involved. See, they spent the entire fall of 1776 being defeated by the British on the battlefield, one defeat after another after another. And by the end of that fall and going into winter, belief in the American cause was at an all-time low. And then came the brutal winter of 1777. It was as awful as you can possibly imagine. Many men froze to death because they didn't have enough clothing. They didn't have enough shelter. Other men starved to death because there wasn't enough food to eat. Other men died due to disease that ravaged the soldiers. 2,000 of Washington's 11,000 soldiers died that winter at Valley Forge. And in the midst of this chaos and suffering and death, Washington had an idea. Do you know what it was? He put on a play. His favorite play, a play called Cato. It was a story about a man who gave his very life in a battle against tyranny and evil. When I first stumbled across that and heard that story, I thought to myself, you've got to be kidding me, right? Men are starving to death. Men are freezing to death. Washington wants to do community theater? This sounds like a horrible idea. The only way that you could make the idea worse would be to invite the Los Angeles Lakers there to opening night, right? But then I thought, wait a second. Washington was a brilliant leader, and he understood the power of story. And so he told this story on the stage of a man who gave his life in the battle against tyranny and evil, hoping that his soldiers might be encouraged and inspired, hoping that his soldiers might take some ideas from that story and bring it back to their lives and bring it back to the battles that they faced in their time. Stories hold the power to transform our lives. And I hope that truth encourages you today and inspires you and reminds you that God is working on you that God is transforming you because God loves you. And he is using story to lead you into the life that he designed you to live. Will you pray with me? God, we confess this morning that we just long to experience transformation. We have so many areas of our lives that we are so discouraged about, so ashamed about. Areas of our lives that are wreaking havoc in our souls. And we long to be transformed, God. And I pray that this idea this morning that we've talked about might encourage us. It might remind us that you are working in the world in 1,000 different ways to do that work. And that one of the ways you do that is through story. Help open our eyes, Lord, to the power that story has when you enter into them and work through them to transform us. God, some of us here today, we need a fresh word of grace. We are being crushed by shame and guilt and self-hatred, and we don't think we're enough. We cannot imagine the possibility that you can forgive us and that you can love us. God, will you whisper in this moment a fresh word of grace to us? Will you whisper to us that we are loved, that we are forgiven, that we are worthy through your Son, Jesus, that no amount of dysfunction can ever keep us from your love and your grace? And for those of us that are far from home, can you give us an image of you standing out in front of the house, scanning the horizon, hoping beyond hope that this is the day that your prodigal son returns home? God, lead us into that grace and let it change the way that we exist in the world. Let it change the way that we relate to you. Let it change the way that we relate to ourselves and to others. It's in your name that we pray. Amen.